Katie, and you're listening to the Home Ed Voices podcast, where I talk to people about their home education adventures and experiences here in the UK. This is episode number 11, and this week I'm talking to Ronnie from Multicultural Motherhood. We talk about finding a regular community in a city with a large number of home edding families and lots of activities to go to. We talk about teaching other languages as part of your home ed routine, and as a trained speech and language therapist, Ronnie tells us how parents can support their children's early language development. So now, on with the episode. This week, I'm talking to Ronnie from Multicultural Motherhood. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm really happy to be here.
Excellent. Thank you. First question, tell me a bit about your family.
Well, I'm Ronnie and I live in Bristol in the southwest of England with my four children, and they are aged 9, 6, 3 and 1. And I'm married to a Kurdish man from Turkey. And so we are bringing up our children bilingual in English and Turkish. So that's one of the reasons we homeschooled, really, to really focus on the languages and be able to spend more time abroad. But we have a lot of fun in our homeschool, and we do... We kind of like to follow kind of Charlotte Mason, a bit of Charlotte Mason philosophy, and we have a lot of we do a lot of nature study as well.
Excellent. So why did you start home educating?
Well, I actually never ever thought of homeschooling. It's a funny story, actually. When I was growing up, I didn't know anyone who was home educated. I never thought about home educating. But we actually moved to Germany when my eldest was about 2.5 years old, because my husband's got some brothers over there. So we moved there for about 6-7 months. And while we were there, my daughter got to the age where she'd be able to start kindergarten. So I tried to get her into the local kindergarten, and the waiting list was about 500 kids long. So I thought, if we stay here, there's no way she's going to go to kindergarten, and she'll just start school when she's 6-7, because they start school a bit later over there. Yeah. And then I was thinking, well, I need to do something with her before she's 7, you know, teach her something.
Yeah.
So then I just started looking into home educating, and after the first book that I read on home educating, I just thought, this is amazing. I'm going to home educate. She's not going to go to school. This is fantastic. And that's it. After that, I just wanted to home educate.
Can you remember what the book was?
Yeah, it was called I Can Do It Too. And I can't remember the author, but it was like 25 interviews with different homeschooling families.
Oh, I just knew that about book, I think.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And it was just about the way that they home educate in their family. And it was really good just to like see how different people do it differently and get ideas and things. Yeah, it was a brilliant, brilliant book.
I will stick it in the show notes.
Yeah.
So I'm right in saying that in Germany, you can't home educate. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So it's actually illegal to home educate in Germany, and it is in Turkey as well, which is why we would not be moving to Turkey anytime soon. So yeah, and I think it stems from in Germany, it actually stems from when Hitler was in power, and obviously he wanted everyone to be, you know, going to school and, you know, to be brainwashed into his way of thinking, really. So yeah, that's what the school system is sometimes, isn't it? It's a bit of brainwashing, I suppose. They don't really, like in Germany, obviously they didn't want anyone to have a different way of thinking or be able to go a separate way to the mainstream. So yeah, it's still illegal now, actually, in Germany, and it is in a few other countries as well, Turkey, and I'm not sure, maybe Spain as well.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think it's definitely illegal in a couple of countries, yeah.
So then you moved back from Germany.
Yeah. So, yeah, one of the reasons was because we decided to home educate then. And so obviously if we stayed in Germany, we wouldn't have been able to. So yeah, we thought we'd better come back to the UK.
So what do you love about home education?
Well, I just love the freedom, really. I think, you know, it's just so amazing. Like, whenever your children wake up and they say they want to learn about something, you could just dive right into it. You don't have to be kind of bogged down by school start and pick up times. You don't have to be stuck inside. You can be outside. I mean, I just love it that we can just go out whenever we want. We can go on holiday whenever we want, and we can learn about whatever we want to.
Yeah, it makes a big difference, I think, having that, the option.
Yeah, definitely.
I always feel like it's, In some respects, it's quite a small thing to like not. Okay. I always feel like it's quite a small thing to not have to get everybody out of the house, you know, before 9 in the morning and pick them up again from, you know, potentially various different places. But, you know, it's not the only reason that we do it, but it's quite a big deal. I think it would have taken over our days quite a lot, like if we
Yeah, I
had to
mean,
do that.
there's just lots of reasons I think for home educating. And you know, one of the main reasons for me is that I want my children to study what they want to study. I don't want to, you know, them to be following the national curriculum where everyone has to learn a particular thing.
Yes.
I just think, you know, all children are different and everyone should be studying different things. We don't need like thousands of people that are all exactly the same with exactly the same qualifications. We need all kinds, different kinds of people in the world, you know, because everyone's got something to give, and it's better when children are able to follow their own interests and then do what they want to in life.
Yeah, totally. So, what's the hardest part?
The hardest part, I would say, I mean, at the beginning, I really thought the hardest part was going to be not having any me time and having my children with me all the time.
Yeah.
So when I started to think about homeschooling, this was the thing that was really getting to me. And I was like, oh, I was looking forward to when they started school and then I get a break for 6 hours a day.
Yes.
But, you know, then you start to realize that children are only small for such a small amount of time. You know, by the time they're 18, they might be moving away to university or to get jobs somewhere else, and then you
Yeah.
won't see them anymore. So I think, you know, it's really important to be spending as much time as possible with the children while they're young. You know, you just have to make the most of it, spending time, because, you know, time just goes so quickly, and before you know it, they'll just be grown up. So yeah, that isn't really an issue for me now. I really enjoy spending time with them. But I think one of my biggest issues now is socialization. Now I know, you know, socialization, you know, children, the difference between school and homeschool is socialization just looks different. You know, in
Yeah.
school, children are just spending time with 30 other kids the same age as them. But in homeschooling, it's quite good because they're spending time with children of different ages. But what I found difficult is actually getting my children seeing the same children regularly.
Yeah.
Because here in Bristol, there's so many homeschoolers and there's so many homeschool groups and activities that, you know, you can be seeing different people all the time because, you know, people will do one group for a couple of months and they might do another group. So, you know, we do chop and change things a lot, and the children are kind of friends with someone for a while and then we don't see them. And, you know, so this is quite difficult, I found. Yeah.
Yeah, it's finding, I think it's quite difficult to find a regular group of people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
People, a group of people that you see regularly, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Because, you know, each family has different needs and maybe they align for a bit and then, you know, yeah, I can understand that. Have you been able to solve that? Has that been something you've been able to ease?
Well, I've actually started to set up my own groups,
Yeah.
and this has been a good way to really see the same children more regularly. So I set up a very small project group. So we meet with about three other families once a fortnight, and we just go and take it in turns, really. So each time we meet, it'll be at someone else's house,
Yeah.
and the person who's hosting it, they will actually run the session.
Yeah.
So that's been a good way. Another group that I've set up is a nature group. So we meet also once a fortnight to follow the nature curriculum. And this has been another good way to find like-minded people and also to see the same people more regularly.
Yeah, totally. I think it helps to have a mixture, isn't it, of bigger groups that are sort of open to everybody, and then like not to be afraid to kind of have smaller groups that you set up with, you know, people you meet up along the way, because it does allow
Yeah,
the children to kind of, you know, deepen their friendships.
I mean, it's quite important, those big groups as well, I think,
Oh
because
yeah, completely.
they tend to be, I find them quite useful because they're they've got a lot of children with a lot of different ages, so I can kind of go there and I know that all of my children will be able to find somebody to play with because it will cater to all the age groups.
Yeah.
But you know, these little smaller groups, you know, sometimes it's just focused on one particular age group, so then the other ones get left out a bit. So I do try to find childcare for my younger ones when I'm running the project group, for example.
Yeah. It's just a juggle, isn't it? Particularly when you've got you know, children of different ages and different needs and stuff. And sometimes that means, yeah, that somebody doesn't have, you know, somebody doesn't have all of their age group around them for a bit, but, you know, but then other times they will and somebody else, you know, it's a kind of sharing balance, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what's a typical day in the life of your family look like?
Well, we tend to do our work in the morning and then we know it's done and we can relax for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
So we start off by, you know, after breakfast and getting dressed and everything, we start off by doing our maths and English. So for maths, I actually follow the Math Mammoth curriculum. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yeah,
I found that really, really useful. I actually used to use an app called Conquer Maths. It's a website, actually, but you can get it as an app.
Oh, yes,
and
I've heard
of that. I didn't find online maths particularly useful for us because I found that, you know, the children would just go through it so quickly, but they weren't retaining any of the information.
Yeah.
So, and also I thought, even though it's maths, it is quite important to be able to write the sums out.
Yeah.
I like the idea of them just, you know, tapping on a screen or anything. So, yeah, we've moved over to Math Mammoth now, which I find really, really good. We got it as a PDF download, so I just print off the sheets when we need it, and, you know, it's really good. The children are getting on really well with that. And also, it's quite cheap as well compared to other maths curriculums and resources.
That's good.
So, yeah, it's really good. I think it cost me about £55 for the first three books, and they're going to keep me going for about 4 years, I think. So
that's very good. That's, yeah.
It's very good, yeah.
I can't remember if that's – is that – US based? I can't remember. Is it UK?
I think it was originally US based, but you can now get like British versions.
Oh, so
they give you like the extra, you know, like the money section you can get in British pounds, basically.
Oh,
so
yeah,
it's useful for everyone, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we do that for maths. And then for English, we mainly just read. So the children read a bit to me and I get them to do a few spellings every day. And we also do copy work. Which is very big in the Charlotte Mason philosophy.
Yeah.
But we've got this poetry book called I'm the Tree That Grew the Seed. And it's a nature poetry book. So it's one poem for each day of the year. So normally we would just go to the poem of that particular day. And if it's a nice one, because some of them the children don't like that much, but if it's a nice one that the children like quite short, then they'll try copying that out. For my elder one, she's 9 now, she will be able to do probably a poem a day. But for the 6-year-old, he probably just writes a line or two a day. But I just find copy work a really good way to get children learning about how, you know, sentence structure and the grammar and vocabulary, spelling. It's just really good. And I don't really think you need any fancy English curriculum. I think, you know, just reading and writing and copy work, you'll be fine with that, really, for English.
Yeah.
So then after that, we tend to have our snack break, which is normally kind of fruit and nuts or, you know, something we baked. If we get up early, we do like to bake something nice for our snacks. And then after that, we normally do, for the rest of the morning, we'll normally focus on one topic, one subject.
Right.
So it will either be science or history or nature studies or something like that. So, yeah, that's kind of how our days go. We also try and fit in the languages a bit as well. So my children learn Turkish, so we'll try and do a bit of Turkish every day. I've recently started teaching them French as well, so we try and do a bit of that daily. But it's very short. Language lessons, they don't have to be long. I think, you know, just 10 minutes a day is absolutely plenty for that.
Yeah, it's a consistency, isn't it, rather than...
Absolutely. I mean, short, regular language lessons are much better than, say, an hour lesson once a week. And then in the afternoons we tend to go out either to a homeschool group or meet up with friends at the park or the woods. We like to spend a lot of time outdoors, so we try and do kind of outdoorsy things in the afternoons.
That's really brilliant. So what's you were saying about there's lots of stuff going on. I was going to say, what is going on for home educators in your area?
Yeah, well, pretty much everything you can think of, there's a group set up for it, from multi-sports, even Latin, there's a Latin group that happens, there's different language groups, there's kind of ukulele groups, pottery, art, drama, singing, pretty much anything you could think of, there's a home school group set up for it.
I always think it's amazing that people don't, when obviously if you're not part of the home ec community, you think there's nothing going on. And then, the amount of people who, sort of, I don't know, become part of Facebook groups and start home educating or whatever. And suddenly they're inundated with stuff. It comes up really regularly on the podcast that people are like, you could do something, if you had the money, you could do stuff every single day of the week, like all day, every day kind of thing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no shortage of things to do at all. Especially in Bristol, because there's just so many homeschoolers in Bristol. So you can really just meet up with people all the time, all different kinds of groups. But as I said earlier on, it is a bit of a disadvantage having so many because it means you are seeing, different people all the time. So I've actually started to spend time now with smaller groups of people, because I live quite near to Somerset as well. So I spend quite a lot of time with the Shepton Mallet group. And, because it's a smaller community, we do see each other more regularly, which helps a lot as well.
Yeah, because when there's so much going on, people want to dip their toes into you do this for a little bit, as you say, and then change and do something else, and there isn't always that continuity. And I can see that particularly in a big city. I mean, Bristol's got so much going on and so many museums and all that kind of stuff that yeah, I can imagine. You want to try, everybody wants to try everything, and so it's hard to commit to stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
So do you have any resource recommendations for other home ed parents?
Yeah, well, the nature curriculum, really, exploring nature with children. We've been using that for the last 2 years now, and it's just an absolutely fantastic resource. Before, I never really knew that much about nature. Growing up, going to school, they don't teach about nature studies really in school these days, do they?
No.
So I didn't really know anything about the natural world or anything like that. But just starting to use this nature curriculum has really changed our lives because every time we go out now, the children are pointing stuff out, and it really improves their observation skills as well. They'll be pointing to the birds and saying, "Oh, what bird is that?" Or they'll be looking at the flowers and the seed heads and different leaves, and they're starting to know the names of different wild flowers and trees and things now, which is really, really nice. But yeah, it's just an absolutely brilliant resource because each week it takes a different nature topic. So, for example, seeds or wildflowers, butterflies, caterpillars, the moon, the weather. There's a really, really wide variety of topics. So each week you study a different topic, and it'll give you a little bit of introduction to the topic and give you some scientific information. And then there'll be a recommended reading list, which will give you a list of fiction and non-fiction books for that particular topic. And then there'll be a piece of art to study for the week and a poem to study. And then there'll be some activities which you can do. So it's just been really, really good. You can, and because it's got a bit of art in there, and some of the activities will include writing, a story or a poem. You can actually cover quite a lot of typical school subjects just through nature studies, which is what I really like about it as well.
Yes, it's really, yeah. And also because it's UK based, the book lists are actually stuff you can get hold of.
Yeah, well, some of them are a bit difficult actually
Oh,
because
really?
they yeah, because it's like it's based on the Charlotte Mason philosophy.
Yeah.
So Charlotte Mason talked a lot about living books, so books which were full of rich ideas that kind of engage the child a lot.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is a lot of these kind of living books are written quite some time ago,
Yeah.
so sometimes some of these books are quite hard to get hold of because they're not new books, they're not modern
Right.
books that are being printed now. So sometimes you can just get the book second hand. I quite often just look on Amazon, and I buy a lot of our books secondhand, really, because you don't need to buy brand new
No.
books. So yeah, but that is the problem, I would say, that quite a few of the books may be out of print and you'll need to buy them secondhand. But you don't need to buy all of the books for that particular week. You can just pick and choose one or two books, to enhance your week's study.
Do you have any book recs, or read aloud recs?
What have we read recently? We've been reading Roald Dahl recently. So we've read the BFG and Matilda. And what I really liked reading recently was, what is her name? E. Nesbitt, is that her name?
Yes.
She wrote a really lovely book called The Story of the Treasure Seekers. I don't know
Yes.
whether you've heard of it,
Yes, I
but
have.
I didn't read that when I was growing up, and I read it just because I picked it up in a charity shop, and it was such a lovely story, and I love her style of writing as well. So I want to read more of her books with the children because I just think she's got a lovely way of writing, and the children were really engaged. We've actually listened to The Railway Children quite recently on audiobook. But there's something nice about reading her books yourself, I think, because I just really like the language and her style of writing. So I think I may read it again to them, not on audio, because I quite enjoy reading her writing myself. But yeah, so they're really good. Anything by E. Nesbitt, I would say, is really good. What else? We read quite a lot of Enid Blyton books, because they're quite an easy read, and I think they're good for the younger children as well. Because I think some of the classic books, you have to wait until the children are a bit older. Like, I've tried reading The Sword in the Stone and The Wind in the Willows, but I feel like it was going over their heads a bit, at the age they are now. So I think a lot of the classics, you maybe have to wait a little bit longer. But yeah, E. Nesbitt, Roald Dahl. Though you do have to be careful a bit with Roald Dahl, because I do think, they have some sad parts at the beginning, don't they? Because, often they're the child's an orphan and their parents have died. So I think, you have to be careful and not maybe not read bits, or if you've got a sensitive child, you might have to think twice about reading some of those books.
We had that with I read James and the Giant Peach, and the beginning is really sad, as he's got these two horrible aunts and they don't care about him, and he can remember how lovely his parents. I think you have to kind of, if you can, if you're going to start that, you either have to kind of edit it a little bit or read a big chunk of it. Like read the plan to have enough time to read the sad opening and then the sort of next adventure-y bit, so that you can see that it's not just going to be. So the kids can see it's not just going to be miserable. Do you know what I mean? And they can be kind of
Absolutely.
pulled on by the exciting next bit to get them over that sort of sad first hump.
So yeah, you do have to be careful with those books, but after you get through that bit, they're really, really nice, and the children really enjoy them.
The other thing I want to mention is, obviously, we'll be putting links to your Instagram account and things like that, but your Instagram story archive of home ed books. I like fell down a hole. I'm like, I was like, because I was doing my research, as you do before an interview. And then I was like, oh, no, I don't know about, oh God, I don't know about this. I'm going to go back and make a list. It's going to be very bad for my budget, but so go and check those out, because that's packed full of
Yeah, I
fantastic
can't
books.
even remember what I've added to it, to be honest. Yeah, I am a bookworm, and I do buy books all the time, and my children get a bit fed up, because when a parcel comes, they're like, "Oh, what is this parcel?" And they're like, "Oh, it's another book." Just books. I only buy books. So yeah, I literally buy books all the time. Whenever we start a new topic, I'm always like looking for books, related to that topic. I go on Amazon, I look through all the secondhand books, and I think I did put quite a lot of nature book recommendations recently, I think, on my Instagram highlights.
There were lots of kind of science picture books and sort of nature picture books that were actually, that were living books. They were factual, but also, kind of, which looked
So
amazing.
I do try to get, follow Charlotte Mason's philosophy there and, try and get living books as much as possible. Though it is quite hard sometimes because a lot of the modern books are not, they're kind of what Charlotte Mason would call twaddle. So it's quite difficult sometimes. But, there's lots of book list recommendations. If you just search for like living books in a particular topic on Google, you'll probably come up with like some blog post or article which lists, for a particular topic, lots of like living books. But yeah, my house is full of books. I would say it's probably my biggest problem. Just having books everywhere, piled everywhere. But I kind of think, it's gonna, promote some learning and some interest. My children can just go and pick up a book, whenever they fancy and have a flick through it. Yeah, I just love books. So yeah, in my Instagram, yeah, I've got quite a lot of different highlights, haven't I? So I've got like a section for speech and language because I'm a speech and language therapist by training. So I do post quite a lot on social media about, tips for speech and language issues or for child development and things like that. And because I specialize in bilingualism as well, I do often post, tips about raising bilingual children and tips and resources for language learning. So that's quite a big part of what I do, apart from the homeschooling as well. And I've recently started running some courses for children with speech, language, and bilingualism issues as well. So my first course actually running in April was Raising Talkers, How to Help Your Child to Talk. And it was really for parents of babies and young children who wanted to gain the knowledge and know how to boost their child's language skills. Because I have, it is quite sad actually that language delay is increasing quite a lot. And they say now 1 in 5 children start school with an early language delay. And a lot of this can be prevented, just by the way, changing the way that you interact with your children and, for example, switching off screens and, having more face-to-face interactions. And there's quite a lot of things that you could do to actually boost your child's language skills. But, it's so important to have those early language skills because without language, you wouldn't be able to read, you wouldn't be able to learn. So even if you think about it in terms of education, just having those basic skills is just so, so important. So it's really a big problem if children are reaching the age of 5 and they don't have the language skills because they won't be able to start learning phonics and start learning to read. They won't learn anything. So we really need to try and boost our children's language skills as early as possible to get them up to, the correct level and for them to reach the best of their ability because it even affects, later school achievements, at the age of 16, 18. It even affects their life chances. There's some research been out recently that language skills at the age of 2 actually predict life chances. So, whether they're going to go to college, whether they're going to live in a good neighborhood, get a good job. So it's something really, really important. I want to encourage parents to look out for and to, just change their way of speaking and interact with their children because parental interaction is actually one of the biggest predictors of a child's language ability.
Because you've written quite a lot about how the sort of preventative methods, or the sort of, sharing of information and stuff, and things like children's centres have really slowed down, and the budget for that has kind of been cut. So there's not even that kind of help out there.
Which is probably another reason why we're seeing an increase because the preventative work is not going on right at the beginning. I actually think that antenatal classes should involve teaching parents the best way to interact with their children because language learning actually starts from before birth. When babies are inside the womb, 18 weeks gestation, they're actually starting to hear things. So right from birth, you can be doing lots of things with your baby to help boost skills. And, because this preventative stuff is not happening, it's leading to language problems later on. I mean, when I was studying at university, we actually used to go into children's centres and give talks to parents with babies about how to interact with their children. But these things got scrapped in about 2011. The Tory government, they cut the NHS and, it's just gone downhill, I think, since then. I mean, there's hardly any jobs for speech and language therapists, and you know, a lot of people are having to go to private companies, which is really, really expensive. So that's really why I wanted to run my courses, because, you know, parents will be able to gain the skills themselves to be able to help their children, and they won't have to wait on waiting lists, you know, for a long time. And, you know, the longer you wait, obviously, the worse it's going to get. So yeah, my first course was Raising Talkers. My second course coming up in June is Clear Speech, and that is going to be for parents to learn speech and speech therapy techniques, actually, to help their children with speech sound difficulties. So when children can't say specific sounds like us or r or things like that. So that's what I'm doing for my next course coming up in June. Yeah. Because these days, actually, you don't get a lot of therapy for that on the NHS, I don't believe. I think, you know, you may see a therapist for an assessment, and then maybe the parents will just be sent home with a worksheet. Because, you know, they just haven't got the budget, really, yeah, to see children with these kind of difficulties. So yeah, this is my next course coming up in June. And then I've got another course coming up a bit later in the year, which is going to be about emergent literacy. So it's going to be for parents, you know, who really want to know when and how to teach their children to read and write. And I'm going to be covering things like, you know, how to form the basis for literacy from birth, really. And then, you know, as they progress, what kind of things you can be doing with your children to help them to learn to read and write.
Excellent. We will have links to all of these courses as they become available in the show
Great.
Notes. So hopefully whenever you're listening to this, you can follow there and go and find more information.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
No problem. What would you want someone who doesn't home educate to know about home education?
I would like them to know that children do socialise, because that's actually one of the biggest myths, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, as soon as you meet someone, they just think, oh my God, don't they mix with other kids? You know. It'd be great for people to start realising that socialisation, you know, happens in the homeschool community. But also that, you know, home educated children are not weird, I guess, because I think that can be a myth as well, you know, oh, home educated children, there's something wrong with them, you know, but there's nothing wrong with them. Everybody's different. I mean, and, you know, we just live a brilliant lifestyle. I would just say, you know, the amount of freedom we've got, it's just incredible. I mean, why wouldn't anyone want to live like this? Why wouldn't you want to spend time with your children? Why wouldn't you be able to spend a lot of time outdoors with them and have fun with them? You know, I mean, home education is just the best, I would say.
That's fantastic. That's like the perfect way to end the interview. Where can people find you online?
So I've got my blog, which is multiculturalmotherhood.com, and on my blog I've got lots of information about homeschooling and motherhood and also speech, language and bilingualism issues. And then on Instagram, I'm very, very active on Instagram at multiculturalmotherhood. So I post every day on my stories and on my grid the kinds of things we're getting up to. So if you're interested to see, you know, what a home educating family gets up to on a daily basis, I would say go and check out my Insta stories, because I'm always posting, you know, what we're getting up to, whether it's maths or whether it's arts and crafts or science or nature group. Every day I will post what we're getting up to on my story. So that's a really good way to follow along what we're doing.
Excellent.
Oh, I also have a YouTube channel as well.
Yes.
Which is just called Multicultural Motherhood as well. So if you're interested to see, I've got a few vlogs on there, kind of homeschooling vlogs. And also I've got quite a few videos of homeschooling ideas. So for different topics, for example, I've got one about autumn leaves, and I've got another one about how we learnt about space and the planets and astronauts and things. So if you're looking for some homeschooling ideas, I do have quite a few videos as well.
Excellent. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been lovely to talk to you.
Thank you for inviting me. It's been wonderful.
And there you go. If you want to find out more about any of the things we talked about on this episode, or to leave a comment, please go to the show notes at the blog at learninginanoxfordkitchen.co.uk and click on the link to Home Ed Voices podcast, or follow the link on Instagram at Home Ed Voices podcast, or Twitter at Home Ed Voices. This is episode 11. If you want to support the show, please rate and review at Apple Podcast, as this helps more people find out about it. The Home Ed Voices podcast is an independent production and is created, hosted and produced by me, Katie Hanrot. The podcast theme tune is Hope for Tomorrow by Seastock. You can subscribe to the podcast at Apple Podcast, Google Play, Stitcher or anywhere else where podcasts are found. I'll be back with episode 12 in 2 weeks, and until then, here's to more Home Ed adventures.